Hello and welcome to another edition of the Mizzou Sports Podcast presented by the Columbia Daily Tribune. I'm Daniel Jones, and with me is Cameron Teague Robinson. We cover Mizzou football, basketball, pretty much everything else. We try to keep tabs on as much as we can during these crazy times. How was your New Year's? I don't think we've done one of these since New Year's.
Really?
Have we? We did one... After the Florida game. So I guess we did kind of talk a little bit about that, but how was your last 3 days?
Not bad. I had our Wi-Fi is already messing up.
Yeah, that was fast.
That was really quick.
That was fast.
I had yesterday off, so that was nice. Kind of just hang out with some friends.
Mm-hmm.
And then woke up today and started preparing for Arkansas.
I enjoyed your comment yesterday. We were just talking about the weather yesterday and how it got really cold really fast. Snow, freezing rain, things of that nature. And meanwhile, your hometown is getting pummeled with snow.
Yeah, my friends were talking about. I've seen all the Snapchats, and it's nuts. It's nuts out there.
You're totally unfazed.
It is what it is.
Unfazed by a half inch of sleet.
Yeah, exactly. A friend of mine texted me, and I was on my way to their house, and they texted me and goes, be careful, it's sleeting outside, or I think it's sleeting outside. And I go, LOL, I'll be okay. I'm almost there.
We're fine, exactly. Guys. I'm an expert.
I'm gonna go refresh this and see if it works.
Okay.
But yeah.
Meanwhile, I'll talk about my day.
Yeah, you talk about your 3 days.
So yesterday was an interesting one. I got a chance to go to Jefferson City and see what you would call in this profession, I guess, an old flame. I don't know. Kim Anderson was coaching Pittsburgh State in Jefferson City against Lincoln last night, which would have been Thursday night. And so the first time I'd gotten a chance to cover Kim since he left Mizzou, and Pitt State ended up losing to Lincoln 75-70 in a competitive game. But it was good to get a chance to talk to Kim about his new stop and, you know, what he thinks about Pitt State. So hopefully that'll be the subject of an upcoming story next week about Kim Anderson, what he's doing at Pittsburgh State, and how that transition has kind of suited him. He definitely felt like he was in a comfortable spot. I think being at Pitt State affords him the chance to do things that he wasn't able to do at Mizzou. That's something that was important to him. So it sounded like he had moved on from Mizzou, and he was happy with where he was at. So you could read all about that in next week's paper.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. It's nice to see. It's nice to hear about him being happy where he's at, because obviously he had a tough go of it when he was here at Mizzou, and obviously that was his dream job for a while. But it's nice to kind of see him happy, or at least content where he's. I'm sure he'd rather be coaching Mizzou still.
I got that impression too, and if you're just now tuning in to our Facebook Live, we're talking about Kim Anderson, who coached in Jeff City last night against Lincoln University. Yesterday, a couple questions had come up about Mizzou, and, you know, he was willing to talk about it a little bit, but I think he definitely felt like, you know, he was ready to move on from that situation. And so he didn't talk at length about it, just said, you know, it's water under the bridge. He mentioned that he hasn't really communicated with the players very much. He said, they're Konzo's players now, and I want to respect that. So he's kind of been hands-off. He said he hasn't watched a game this year. Of course, he's been busy coaching Pitt State.
True.
They're, I believe, 9-7, 9-8 after winning just 5 games all last season.
Haven't won a road game.
They have not. And we will leave that right there.
Yeah, exactly. Some things haven't changed.
We will leave that right there. But it was good to talk to Kim and catch up with him, and also speak with the Pitt State Athletic Director about, you know, bringing him on as well. So, again, you can look for that story next week about Kim Anderson. Let's see. We've had football news. We've had a basketball game. We've had a women's basketball game.
It's gonna be this is what we call a jam-packed podcast.
This is, as all of them are, I think you might say. First, we'll start with football. Derek Dooley spoke today to reporters for the first time since being announced as the offensive coordinator. A lot of questions about his pedigree, seeing as he has not been an offensive coordinator or a quarterback's coach ever. And through 22 years of coaching, he basically answered the question by saying, there's a lot of things that I ended up coaching that I'd never coached before.
Right.
For example, he came from the Dallas Cowboys where he was a wide receivers coach. And, you know, before that, he had been an offensive assistant and a defensive assistant. He's done a lot of different things. And, of course, he has experience as a head coach, too. So that was kind of how he answered the question. There were a lot of questions, too, about the style of offense.
Right.
That was a big one. I mean, Josh Heupel really made a name, not just, you know, calling the plays and having a successful offense, but for the unique nature of his offense, how fast it was, the spread,
right,
up-tempo.
Right.
So Derek Dooley kind of just said, we're going to be multiple and flexible. And he said, I've run a pro style offense in the past, but you know, who knows what that means anymore,
right,
basically.
Yeah.
So you can maybe expect Drew. They did. Coach Odom said, Drew's never taken a snap under center and he's going to have to learn to do that.
Yeah.
So you can expect some things to change a little bit with what they do. You'll probably see some looks next year that you haven't seen Mizzou run in a really, really long time, I would expect. But I would also expect them to still run at a pretty quick tempo, at a quick pace. I think that Coach Dooley was pretty
right.
set on doing that.
Right.
So, yeah, it's kind of hard to speculate now in January with the season 8 months away.
Right,
but
right.
that's kind of – I think they're keeping it open. You know, they did talk a lot, too, about adjusting to their personnel. So I think whatever plan they do will be kind of based on what the personnel is, and they'll go from there instead of coming in with this is going to be our
right,
offense
cause then you're
and
locked
making everybody
it.
Else adjust.
I know I saw that – and I wasn't there, but I know I saw some tweets from people about Barry saying that – I mean, last year's team, and we've talked about it, just – was so fast that the defense couldn't keep up. Not even just the opponent's defense, but Mizzou's defense. Because when you're going that fast and you go three and out, I mean, you're only on the field for a minute. You know what I mean? So that, I wonder if that's something that they adjust. I think they still, I mean, just because of the personnel you have, I think they're still going to be up tempo.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I'm not sure if you need to be as fast as you were with Heupel, or even if that's going to happen.
I think, well, they did talk about that. And that's kind of been what Mizzou's offense, like the critics of Mizzou's offense have said forever, is, you know, what happens when you go three and out and you
right.
have to kick it in 17 seconds?
Right.
Well, yeah, even if you don't run up tempo and you go three and out,
yeah, sure. it hit.
That's
it
a
hurts.
17 second possession if
yeah.
you're up tempo or not.
Yeah,
I think going three and out kills any offense. It seems to hurt Mizzou's even more because, and this, it has just felt like when Mizzou gets one first down, then they're able to extend drives. They haven't felt like a team that stalls out a lot, unless it stalls out in the beginning.
Right, right.
And a lot of their offense is predicated on big plays. They're one of the best big play offenses in the country last year. And so, you know, a drive can't stall out if you throw a 70-yard touchdown.
Sure.
So the three and outs just look really bad. And, I mean, that's obviously something that you want to change, but it doesn't really matter what offense you run. Some offenses are going to go three and out. And if you're a passing offense, then you're going to go three and out sometimes
right.
because you have incomplete passes and you're behind the sticks. So, yeah, that was something they talked about. And, you know, they talked about playing smart. And when you have a lead, playing smart with the lead, knowing when you can afford to take risks with the ball and
right,
when
right,
you
right.
can't. Typical, I think, offensive coordinator stuff. But, yeah, that's definitely something that's going to be a hot-button issue next year with whatever they decide to do. If they keep the up-tempo, that will continue to be a talking point
right.
is – hey, what about, you know, keeping possession? That wasn't something Mizzou was ever doing under Josh Heupel.
Now, did they say at all how much? I know we talked about this on the last podcast about just Drew's influence on this. Obviously, Drew's coming back. We'll touch on that in a little bit. But I guess did they say anything about kind of just what his influence was in a Dooley hire, or if him and Dooley have even talked?
Yeah, so it definitely didn't sound like a situation where he was Drew's guy.
Okay.
It was a situation where it was Barry's guy. Barry had talked to him and had conversations with him. And I think there was some thought of what he could bring for Drew next season. Barry said, you don't want to make a decision on a coordinator for a quarterback that's coming back for 9 months.
Right, exactly.
But at the same time, you have to understand that Drew's a special talent.
Right, right.
And you got to do everything you can to maximize that talent. So, and Derek Dooley said, you know, there's a lot of things. If we play multiple and we kind of develop some flexibility, he mentioned giving Drew some more responsibility than he's had before. a couple of years ago, Drew was just making reads on one side of the field, and rarely was he, you know, making his own audibles at the line. It sounds like they're going to maybe change some of those things, give him more responsibility, and Derek Dooley said, with the hope that that will make us more flexible, it will give us the opportunity to do different things and maybe help us win. And as a side, it'll help him personally too.
Yeah.
So I think that Drew had mentioned at the Texas Bowl in Houston that his decision was going to, whether he stays or goes, is going to be partially based on who was coming in.
Right.
Which also, if you kind of look at that and you think, well, maybe that'll affect who Mizzou brings in.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like it was like, hey, Drew, what do you think? It was Barry Odom's decision. I think that was considered. I don't think it was the reason that they brought in Derek Dooley, but I think it was a consideration. How can he help Drew in his final year and really make the most out of his senior year?
Obviously, the big news that came in after Dooley was Drew Lock's coming back.
Yes.
He had a really cool video.
That was pretty cool.
It's a pretty sweet video. I watched it a few times through.
Those have just gotten better and better.
Yeah.
That is a booming business.
It is
if you can find an athlete and make their hype video.
Yeah.
I don't know if those people get paid.
Oh, yeah. I mean, probably not the high school kids.
Yeah, probably not.
And I imagine the college kids that usually go to Mizzou, and I imagine a Mizzou student did Drew's, just like they do like the Mizzou basketball ones, stuff like that.
Yeah. I know Mizzou has their own graphics department who does stuff like that, and they do a good job. Mizzou's graphics department is one of the best that I've seen.
Right, yeah. So
they're pretty on brand, you might say.
Hey, it's gotta be.
Exactly.
Gotta be. I loved the Drew Lock securing the bag image or video in there. I was like, you can't have a Drew Lock returning video without him securing the bag.
I thought it was significant when you watch that video. That's the first you see of Drew Lock is him doing that.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like, you know, the last you saw of Drew Lock was him getting humbled at the Texas Bowl and Tom Herman making fun of him with the print, sing around with the backpack, and then him having an answer to that. And so it was almost like Drew Lock kind of taking it back.
Yeah.
Like, hey, this is mine, and I'm going to own it for my senior year.
Exactly.
And then you had Jaden Ironman at the wrestling meet. Did you see that yesterday?
No.
Jaden Ironman pinned a guy from Buffalo, got up, secured the bag.
and then it was going all around the Mizzou program.
Yep, and then Drew Lock quote tweeted on that. So, yeah, it's kind of becoming a Mizzou
That's
thing.
Awesome.
I thought it was significant that was his first image. I didn't think that was by accident.
No, I don't think so either. It'd be funny if, like, Jeremiah Tillman dunks on Saturday and then walks down the court.
That would be fantastic.
That'd be awesome. Like, or Konzo walks into a press conference securing the bag. Can you imagine Konzo Martin securing the bag at a press conference? That'd be awesome.
Konzo.
That'd be one of the greatest things of all
time. Standing up behind the podium like he does, and he just
exactly.
adjusts his straps.
Konzo, what are you doing? Hey, the kids say this is securing the bag. in his deep voice that he has.
I'm surprised Sophie hasn't done that one yet, but I think Sophie's catalog of dance moves is kind of it's kind of out there. I don't think she draws from like the mainstream catalog.
Right.
More to your point, Drew Lock is coming back.
Yeah. What does that mean for Mizzou?
It's huge. Yeah. It means everything for this offense. He returns obviously 44 touchdowns, over almost 4,000 yards. Has a chance to break some career records that are held by Chase Daniel next year. It just opens you up, and it's not just Drew Lock coming back. He's the key to everything.
Right.
But you also have 5 starting offensive linemen coming back, 2 starting wide receivers coming back, and
two running backs,
Demaria Crockett and Larry Roundtree,
neither
of which were considered starters.
Right.
So you said, like, Mizzou has 9 starters coming back because Jamon and Ish were on the starting, but you also have like 2 feature backs coming back. So that offense will pretty much be intact for next year. So that won't be the problem for Derek Dooley. Whatever happens next year on offense, it will not be because they didn't have the talent coming back. It's huge for a lot of reasons for Mizzou, and I think that there's a really good chance that Drew Lock goes in the top 10 of the draft next year, maybe as the best quarterback prospect in the draft next year, and that'll be exciting too, just to see a Mizzou prospect with that kind of pro potential.
Right.
I think it's pretty rare at this school for as prominent as Mizzou athletics are. It just having somebody at that level that has that sort of potential to be a star professional athlete is pretty rare. So that'll be kind of fun to watch next year, as it will with some other basketball players that are probably going to be draft prospects. Did you see today?
I saw John Tavis, the first round pick, and what is it, the Bleacher
Report's mock draft.
Yeah. It doesn't surprise me. The kid's talented.
Yeah. I mean, that's always been, he has the skill set of a guard in a 6'11" body.
Yeah. That's dangerous. Imagine when he just kind of gets built into his body a little bit more. He could be dangerous in the NBA. I really think so.
Yeah.
I just don't think he's adjusted to his body size. He kind of still,
a baby draft.
Yeah, exactly. But really quick on Mizzou football before you go to Mizzou basketball.
Yes.
Obviously loaded schedule next year. I believe they have Alabama and Georgia next
year. Yeah, at Alabama and a home against Georgia.
What do you – I guess with Drew coming back, what does that do for Missouri's expectations SEC-wise next year?
Well, the SEC East, Mizzou is ahead a lot of teams in the SEC East.
Right.
Tennessee is – having to start from scratch, basically, because they were so late. I mean, getting around on their coaching staff and everything, that's tough, especially with an early signing period.
Right.
If you're unsettled for that, then it hurts. I think they're ahead of Tennessee. I think they're ahead of probably where Florida will be next year. Florida has a lot of talent, and they'll be good on defense like they always are. But I think they'll be ahead of Florida just with the talent that they have coming back. And the coaching staff, having a plan in place, I think they'll be ahead of Vanderbilt and probably ahead of Kentucky, which will lose a lot on the offensive side next year too.
Right.
So that means you're a top three team in the SEC East, and even in a weak division like the SEC East, that's pretty good.
Right.
That puts you on par with probably South Carolina, and I don't think anybody's going to be in Georgia's league. Maybe just Alabama and the whole SEC next year, but I think there's a possibility that Mizzou could be one of the two or three best teams in the SEC East next year. They just have so much coming back, and they have a lot of talent, and if they can figure out how to get things going at the beginning of the year as opposed to the middle to the end of the year, then they'll be a dangerous team.
It's tough for them because Georgia brings so much back.
Yeah.
They're going to be loaded next year.
Yeah. They're going to be really, really good.
It's a tough spot for them. But, I agree. I think Mizzou's probably one of the two or three best teams in that division right now. I just don't think that there's any touching Alabama or Georgia.
Right. And Mizzou's non-conference next year, it's nothing super scary. They go to Purdue. They will also play, I believe, Tennessee Martin as like their early game against a lower tier opponent. I'm trying to some of the other teams that they're scheduled to play. I believe Memphis. I'd have to go back and double check on that at some point. Maybe while you're, but anyway, yeah. Right. But that conference schedule, like this year, they had to host Auburn, which is obviously a tough draw, but almost any team that you draw out of the West is going to be really tough.
Really brutal, yeah.
So that's just going to be a tough crossover game every year. This year, they have to go to Alabama. So that,
which is even worse.
Right.
Now, and the thing for the Alabama is that freshman quarterback is going to be around for a little while, and he is talented.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to try to pronounce his name.
Tua, I know it's Tua. We can just call him Tua.
Yeah, but he is—he's talented. He can really sling the ball, and that's something Alabama hasn't had in a while.
Mm-hmm.
A quarterback.
Can you imagine Alabama with the best quarterback in the SEC?
That'd be nuts. And with
it's laughable.
Right.
That's what it is.
And they'll still have running backs who look like linebackers.
You mentioned that during the game, and that was a very astute comment because they do, especially Scarborough.
He's literally a that linebacker guy, running back.
That guy running at you in a dark alley somewhere have to hit you. You'd be dead before he got within 5 feet.
Oh, I'd be so out.
Yeah.
Paul Cunningham. Thank you for the
Some star power.
Yeah, some star power.
Yeah.
Shout out to the women's basketball team and Sylvie Cunningham.
That's
Paul,
right.
If you're still around, we're going to talk about the women's basketball team here in a little bit, so check back.
Yeah.
But to your comment about Mizzou football, non-conference, they host UT Martin to start the year, host Wyoming second week, go to Purdue, and then they host Memphis on homecoming.
Okay.
That's their non-con.
So that's – Memphis is obviously a really good team.
Yeah. And then
how much they'll bring back next year will be interesting.
Right.
But, that's not a real terrifying non-conference slate when the toughest, test for you is going to Purdue.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's nice timing. I don't want to say lucky, but nice timing that Wyoming's quarterback is now in the draft.
Exactly. Yeah. You're getting a Wyoming team that's you know, having a star quarterback to
Right, right.
So I think expectations will be high.
Yeah,
again, we're a long way out, but I think they'll be pretty high for Mizzou next season.
Okay. Any other football-related stuff?
I don't think so. Oh, well, another story cooking up for next week. AJ Afadale was named the 10th assistant. Details on that were pretty scarce, like what he'll be doing and what his contract details are. He's been out of town all week at a coach's conference, so looking forward to talking with him just about his new opportunity. And he's climbed the coaching scale pretty quick after leaving Rockbridge. He was at Rockbridge for a while, for 13 years, but now that he's out, he's gone through it pretty quickly. And
we both, I mean, usually you don't really kind of put your opinion in on these things, but we both know AJ pretty well.
Yeah.
He's a great guy.
He's just, AJ, I can say this, I think, pretty objectively. He is an awesome person to talk to.
Yes, yes. Great
just
quote.
About anything because he's such a thoughtful guy about football. I mean, he will, every conversation with AJ about football is like, it's like a session, like a class session. Yeah. Like, I feel like I learn a lot, and his thoughts on the, you know, the recruiting process, getting kids recruited when he was at Rockbridge, like getting his own players recruited, and then at Mizzou, you know, his thoughts on going out and finding guys. He's just, he's a very thoughtful and procedural guy. He's got a lot of good thoughts. He's wise.
Right. He's like Konzo in that sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're both very wise with what they do. Both very easy to talk to. And they don't have a problem talking to you for however long you need to.
Yeah, I agree with that. One little story that I got from Joe Collier about AJ. Joe Collier, from Rockbridge. You knew him well as on the prep beat as Rockbridge's coach. So last year, Rockbridge's football coach last year. He's the defensive coordinator and served under AJ for a long time there. So I was talking with Joe about AJ and just kind of, you know, like the kind of culture of the program was, you know, what it was like when AJ was there and what Joe learned from AJ.
Right.
And he told this story about how when AJ was the coach there, you had to use the right terminology. Like, for example, if you're a linebacker and the offense is running a sweep play, your job is to contain.
Right.
Not, hey, you got to get out there and bring the guy back. Contain. Right. Use the word contain. Right. It was all about terminology. Like, all the coaches have to use the same terminology because you're trying to instill these things to where they're instinct in a person's mind.
Right.
So it's just kind of like things you wouldn't normally think about.
Right. And at the same time, like while you're trying to win in high school, you're also trying to teach kids things. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Exactly. We're got to race against the clock because you and I are both looking at our recorder.
And I looked up and I was like, I hope you see this.
It is flashing low battery. So we have a race against the clock now. But we will talk about men's basketball. They just beat Georgia.
Yeah.
Beat the pants off of Georgia.
Yeah, especially in the second half. I mean, that first half was like, I texted you.
It was brutal.
I can almost quote the text message. I was like, this offensive first half can't be worse than last year. It was unbearable to watch.
Do you remember what I told you?
And you said, trust me, it is. Or it was, or something like that. I was like,
trust
me,
it's not as bad. We do have a comment from Paula Cunningham. Congrats to Coach AJ Afadale. Maybe now I'll have a real chance to run the chains.
Oh, the chains, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Paul, I'm sure they'd love to have you down there. The Mizzou star power.
Running the chain gang.
Yeah.
That'd be exciting.
Yeah.
That seems like a tougher job than it looks like on TV.
I can't imagine.
But, okay.
Yeah. So
Georgia.
Yeah. Yeah, first half was awful. Best thing about the first half was we got to watch Red Panda at halftime.
Mm-hmm.
Second half, Mizzou came out. I mean, really, Jontay and Jeremiah came out on fire in the post. Jeremiah Tillman had 3 dunks in the first few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Jontay had a very, very nice up and under to give Mizzou an early lead in the second half. Those two are so talented when they're on the floor together. Just when they're on the floor, period. They're not sitting on the bench. I don't think SEC is loaded this year, but I don't think you could find, if you're trying to list 10 freshmen, there's not 10 better freshmen in SEC than them. There's probably not 5 in the SEC better than them.
Yeah.
So they sparked Mizzou in the second half. Georgia makes a little bit of a comeback. Cassius Robertson gets hot, scores 8 straight. Georgia cuts it back to 5. or 8 or something like that. And Kevin Perrier, who struggled the last 7 games, didn't start, had a bad air ball in the first half, came back, scored 7 straight, and by then Mizzou had sealed it. So good win, Mizzou's first top 50 RPI win, a win they desperately needed.
Yeah.
I don't think Georgia's going to stay in the top 50 RPI towards the end of the year. They might, but I think they're around 38, something like that right now. But regardless, that's not a game you can lose.
Yeah,
whether that helps your resume or not, it's just something you don't want to lose.
I think the major takeaway was like Jeremiah Tillman when he is unchained by foul trouble and just like people clogging the paint, so dangerous.
And well, I think what I was most surprising was that they did against Yante Mottin, who is without a doubt the best. I think the best big in the conference.
Mm-hmm.
He might be one of the best bigs in the country, regardless.
Yeah.
And Jeremiah and Jonte did a tremendous job containing him. They had 9 points and only 2 rebounds. He's averaging nearly a double double with 19 points a game.
Yeah, Yante Mottin, like he looked, or as you might pronounce it, Yante Mottin.
Mottin.
If you're a reporter at the KC Star, he looked off.
Yeah, he did.
They showed replays of him on the broadcast, and there was a play against Kevin Perrier where he just was like kind of standing there, you know, face up to the basket, and went. You just instead of making a move or anything, just kind of pulled up, and Kevin, got a hand on the ball.
Yeah.
It just looked like Yante was off for some reason, and like Mizzou took full. I mean, it's one thing to get a bad night from a guy like that, but Mizzou took full advantage.
Right.
They totally dominated the
Georgia
post.
Coach Mark Fox just said after the game, he said, and I'm trying to quote this as best I can, he said something around the sense of, like, give Mizzou's defense credit. They did a tremendous job on Yante, but it wasn't all Mizzou. He didn't think Yante lived up to the hype he gets, or he didn't respond to the physicality Mizzou had. He said, and I can quote this for sure because it was probably one of the more memorable things he said in his press conference, is those guys beat us up all game.
Taking shades out of the women's basketball playbook.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what you got to do. That's Mizzou's strength is in the post. No matter how well Jordan Barnett and Cassius shoot, their strength is always in the post. And they were dominant against Georgia in that way.
Speaking of women's basketball, just real quick, because we did a story on this earlier this week. What did you think of Konzo's comments about the women's game going to quarters?
Yeah, I thought it,
and things like that.
I thought it was something that the men's game should have had a long time ago. I mean, I remember thinking that back when I was at BG.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, it just makes no sense why they can't go to 4 quarters.
Yeah.
I mean, the NBA does it. It's just another adjustment. Like, Konzo mentioned the fact that, like, high school kids have to adjust to the college game because they don't have a shot clock. So you make high school kids adjust to the shot clock, but they're still playing halves. And they're playing 5 fouls. So then when they go to the next level, they have to adjust to 4 quarters and 6 fouls.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't make sense. I don't know why you can't – I don't know why it can't just be universal. It's no real reason why it can't just be universal to me.
The quarters and fouls thing doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
No.
The quarters thing, 6 fouls, I guess I kind of understand not going to that because the college game is shorter than the pro game. So if you give everybody 6 fouls, then you got a game burdened by fouls.
I think Konzo's point with the 6 fouls was just the way the game is played now with hand checking because you can't touch anybody.
Yeah.
So at that point, I mean, Konzo laughed at the end of his kind of little spiel. He goes, we could really use the 6 fouls.
Yeah. Well, he's right about that.
He's right about that.
If a team is going to benefit, it would be Mizzou.
It would. But I think it would be better for the game. And it's just the entertainment aspect of it. Mm-hmm. And that's where Konzo kind of got into that because – people want to play defense, and you win games with playing defense. Defense wins you games. But, I mean, when you're hampered with 6 fouls, with 5 fouls, it's just not as entertaining because you're pulling Jeremiah. I mean, Konzo legitimately has to pull Jeremiah Tillman with 1 foul. I mean, you got to pull these guys. Really,
yeah,
really.
And I understand that, but I will, to your point, to respond to that, and this is a point that Gary Parrish made last year because John Calipari was talking about fouls too, is – there's no rules that say you have to do that.
Right.
You don't have to pull your people with 3 fouls.
But he has to.
If you're the coach, you want to keep them on the floor as long as possible. But that was a point that Dawn Staley made about Asia Wilson in the women's game last weekend. Was she was upset and was kind of critical of the refereeing and said, how many players of the year play half the game?
Right.
Well, technically, the refs didn't have any control over how many minutes she played.
And there's certain players you can play. Like Cassius last against Georgia got in some foul trouble, but Cassius Robertson is a guy you can play. That's a guy who you're looking at. He's not going to get 5 fouls. Cassius doesn't foul much.
Right.
So there's people you can play, and there's people like, not against saying anything against Jeremiah, but there's guys like Jeremiah who are just very physical. You can't play him in minute 17 when he has a foul. Right. One foul, you got to take him out.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it, I totally agree. I do think it needs to go to four quarters. I think five or six fouls can still be kind of debated.
I do too. I do too. I also like the rule advancing the ball, but that's kind of to be debated at another time. I think that's a good rule. I know a lot of people disagree with that.
Of advancing out of a timeout?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a good rule too.
I think the NBA got that one right.
Yeah.
Big game this weekend for the men against Arkansas.
Yep.
Always a tough place to play. Arkansas has lost three in a row and got killed at home by LSU.
Yeah.
Which was the last place pick in the SEC this year. Yep. They're not that bad. Yep. They're not as bad as a lot of people thought they'd be. But what do you see in this game? Arkansas has a bunch. They're a senior-heavy team.
Yeah, two stellar senior guards.
Yeah.
They showed out against Mizzou last year.
Yeah.
In
Jaylen Arkansas. Yeah. Not in Mizzou. Not in Columbia, but at Arkansas.
Barford had 23 in the game at Columbia.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, Mizzou still won that game, but he had 23.
Right.
So it's Jaylen Barford and Daryl Macon, both senior guards, both averaging over 19 points a game in conference play. I believe Barford's like second or third in the SEC in scoring throughout the whole season.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about a game that's going to test to see Mizzou's guard rotation. I mean, so far, Mizzou's guards have been fine. I think, personally, I'm just going to go on this little quick little tangent. Jordan Geis gets a lot of crap. He's been tremendous. I really think so. I mean, he's not asked to go out there and score a ton.
Yeah.
He's a knockdown shooter when he can, plays solid defense. The turnover against Florida, bad. But he's been great. I think people hold over the West Virginia game over his head a lot.
To be fair, he was good in that game for 25 minutes.
Yes, completely.
Yeah.
I completely agree.
Which that doesn't count for a whole lot in retrospect. But for the reason he got those minutes at the end of the game was because
he
played
so well
for the entire game.
So I don't think Mizzou's at a bad spot with Jordan Geist. And I think we need to kind of set that standard.
Okay. Hard line on Jordan Geist.
Right. But they're going to get tested against Arkansas. There's two very, very good guards. Mizzou has struggled against experienced guards.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. I think that's the biggest thing. I don't think Mizzou should have any kind of problem in the post. Arkansas doesn't defend well, so they'll be able to get shots. I think Arkansas is the second worst team in SEC in terms of field goal percentage defense.
Mm-hmm.
Mizzou should be fine on offense. It's in terms of defending this team, a team that really needs a win. This would be a top 25 RPI win for Mizzou.
Mm-hmm. And a big road win.
And a big road win.
I think this was really interesting. I was shocked to see this today. Arkansas, according to KenPom, ranks last in the SEC in conference games in forcing steals per game.
Yeah.
Which you would not expect from a Mike Anderson team, but maybe
experienced guards. Yeah.
But maybe that's why they've struggled so much. They haven't gotten those turnovers that they depend on. So, yeah, I imagine that's just. They lost three in a row.
Yeah.
But their backs are against the wall.
Yeah.
They're at home playing against a Mizzou squad that, I don't know, if you're looking at rivalries in the SEC, Mike Anderson playing against Mizzou.
Yeah.
I feel like Arkansas is going to come out with their heads on fire
and that place
in this game.
Be rocking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is going to be a real challenge
for
Mizzou this
weekend.
I agree.
What we've been talking about, somebody tweeted me the other day after I tweeted out the bracketology stuff. Mizzou doesn't have a bad loss. This won't be a bad loss if they lose this game, no matter what Arkansas's record tells you. But it'd be a really good win.
Yeah, that's a problem. Mizzou doesn't have many bad losses this year.
But their best win is Georgia.
I feel like if they're serious about being a tournament team, at some point you have to just get a win you can hang your hat on. This would be a really good one, despite all that's happened to Arkansas this year already.
I agree.
Okay.
Really quickly on the bracketology stuff, just so this thing doesn't go off.
Currently
11 seed in San Diego.
So in by the skin of their teeth.
And they're one of the last. Lenardi breaks it up down as like last four to get in, the next four. Mizzou's like the next four. So they're like one of the last eight teams going to my preferred choice, San Diego, and playing Gonzaga. So just putting that out there. There's a ton of work still to do.
Yeah.
But,
For now.
And they believe they've been in every bracketology Lenardi's put out so far. But for now, they're in. Still some work to do.
That's good. And if you live in San Diego or would like to take a trip to San Diego, more power to you. Okay, to the women's basketball team, which is number 12 in the country, coming off wins against South Carolina over the weekend and Vanderbilt last night. Really kind of beat up on a pretty bad Vanderbilt team last night.
They're on fire.
The women's team – at number 12 in the country, they've just been really, really impressive.
Right.
And the way that they win games, it seems like a formula that really works.
Yeah.
They are just almost in almost every game that they play, more mentally tough. Just they are such a difficult team to figure out because they have scores and Sophie Cunningham, Sierra Porter, Jordan Frericks, and Amber Smith, who has become incredible, outstanding player.
And Jordan Javis at 18.
And Jordan Javis, you know, she'll come out and hit some three-pointers on you, too.
Yeah, yeah.
They have been such a compelling team. Since football season's ended, I've spent more time covering the women's team, and they're so compelling. They're so interesting to cover and watch because they score in so many different ways, and they seem to just break teams.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they broke South Carolina,
yeah,
which is a number four team in the country. They just broke them mentally.
Yeah, and the defending champs. You wouldn't expect that.
Yeah, I mean, Mizzou, they dominated that game. And that was a game that Jordan Frericks didn't really even play that well.
Right, right.
So one of their, you know, three or four best players didn't have that great a game, and Mizzou still beat the number four team in the country.
And then you look at the Vandy game on the road. Sophie doesn't have her best day, but Amber Smith and Jordan Chavis combined for 18. This team is just so complete.
Yeah.
From top to bottom. Like, you're looking at Sophie. I think Sophie's one of the three best players in the country. I don't think you can convince me there's three players better than Sophie Cunningham. But this team is much more than Sophie Cunningham.
I agree. And that's what's made them so dangerous.
Right, exactly. Because you can slow down Sophie. I think Amber Smith is the next star of this program.
100%.
She's very, very good. And then when you're getting Jordan Chavis knocking down shots. And it's nuts because Jordan Frericks and Sierra Porter are tremendous inside.
Yeah.
It's just a complete team from top to bottom.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too. Like Mizzou, the men, the Mizzou women can kill you with threes if they want to, but their strength, like the men, is on the inside.
Right, yeah.
Getting the ball to Sierra Porter and getting the ball to
Jordan Frericks.
Yeah. So, yeah, and next year they'll have Sophie coming back.
It's nuts to think that Sophie can get even better next year.
Sophie's coming back, Sierra Porter coming back, Amber Smith coming back, and then Haley Troop, the transfers from South Carolina, coming in next year too. Dangerous. They're going to be really, really good this year and next year. But I'm excited to see what this team can do.
Same.
It's a while from now. It's at the end of the month. But Mizzou will go to Columbia, South Carolina, and what might be the best game in the SEC all season.
Yeah.
Like the Gamecocks are going they're going to prepare for war.
And that place gets rocking on women's basketball games. It's not even half full for men's games so far.
Uh-huh.
But when the women's game – women's
they average over 10,000 for women's games in South Carolina.
So it could be a packed house in there.
The women's basketball SID was saying the other day that one of the reasons why they get so many people is because they have $1 tickets for women's basketball games.
That'd be nuts.
Yeah.
It makes me
think of like 5-cent beer night.
Right.
Like you're just like $1 ticket?
Right.
Like, I had plans tonight. I'll cancel and go to the women's game.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'd go – if I got a text message that said there's $1 tickets to anything, I'd tell, okay, I'm going.
Yep, let's do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, country music concert?
I'm in.
All right.
I'm in.
then it's a really good deal.
I'm in.
Be sure and subscribe to Mizzou's Sports Podcast at iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher.